Beginning in verse 1, John says, "Then I saw the Lamb break one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures call out as with the voice of thunder, 'Come!' I looked, and there was a white horse. Its rider had a bow. A crown was given to him, and he came out conquering and to conquer. When he broke the second seal, I heard the second living creature call out, 'Come!' And out came another horse, bright red. Its rider was permitted to take peace from the earth so that people would slaughter one another, and he was given a great sword. When he broke the third seal, I heard the third living creature call out, 'Come!' I looked, and there was a black horse. Its rider held a pair of scales in his hands. I heard what seemed to be a voice in the midst of four living creatures saying, 'A quart of wheat for a day's pay, and three quarts of barley for a day's pay. But do not damage the olive oil and the wine.' When he broke the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature call out, 'Come!' I looked, and there was a pale green horse. Its rider's name was Death, and Hades followed with him. They were given authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword, famine, and pestilence, and by the wild animals of the earth." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. But last week, we read through chapter 5, where a scroll with seven seals was revealed to us. And this scroll seemed to contain this final act, the God's final move that's going to restore all of creation, all of humanity, into this sanctified state for which it was created to be in the first place. Like this is where we're supposed to be. It's all written there. We need that. Whatever is on that, we need that opened. We need that done. It contained the absolute best possible news for every man, woman, child, and thing to have ever existed or that ever has existed. But the only one who was worthy to break the seals and to reveal and even to execute what was inside was this having been slaughtered lamb, right? This lamb that was sacrificed. And in this image, we know that this lamb is intentionally, was juxtaposed, right, with the Lion of Judah. He hears about the Lion of Judah, but what he sees is something very different, almost the opposite. And it's done on purpose because what he's trying to do here is posture John and the listeners, that's us, to posture John and the listeners of this revelation in such a way that we are forced to put aside false beliefs that power and peace come from brute strength and violence. And instead, to recognize, to look at, to acknowledge that true power, that is peace and life, comes from sacrifice for the sake of others. And I mentioned to us that we need to keep our eyes on the scroll and on the Lamb during this, because this is the important part. What is happening in the throne room? But our eyes can move a little bit to those side quests, if you call them, to those things that distract us. Anybody here ever get distracted by the things that go on in life in your peripheral? Every single person here is like squirrel, right? Like, I know all of you. You guys are all squirrely. That's what we do here. We get squirrely. Right? Right? But, and we do. We end up, instead of looking at the scroll and the lamb, we end up focusing on the seals. And that's fine to a point, but we don't want to misunderstand what they're about. The seals, they serve to ensure that only the one who is worthy to open opens the scroll and does so when that one deems it worthy for them to be opened. That's the point of the seals. It's the contents of the scrolls that are the final revelation of God's good and perfect will for all of creation. But the contents can't be revealed until all of the seals are opened. You cannot reveal anything from that scroll by just opening one seal. And so I want us to try to think of this in a different way. I've been trying to come up with images that might help us to look at it from a different perspective. So here's where I came up. I was a big Norman Rockwell fan, so I had AI help me with some Norman Rockwell images here. I wonder if it would help if we thought of this scroll and the seals like a family. This family receives this gift that's from Dad. Dad says, "I got this gift. It's for the whole family. It's for all of us. It is the gift that is going to change everything. It's the perfect gift." Like, oh my goodness, what is this? Like the iPhone 38 or what? What do we got? Free Wi-Fi that never goes away. What is this perfect gift that he has in this box? They don't know exactly what it is, but they absolutely know that whatever it is, it's going to be a crazy great gift. Now, of course, like any good dad, he wants to make sure that nobody peeked, And so the dad wraps the gift, and then he uses ribbon, and he ties it in a bunch of weird special navy knots to make sure that he was the only one who would open it. So he grabs the gift. He's about to start untying all of these crazy knots that he put on it so that the family can see what's inside. And all the family gets really excited. Oh my goodness, he's going to open it. We're getting this great gift. It's going to be perfect. And so we go to the seal breaking. And what does it say? Then I saw the Lamb break one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures call out as with the voice of thunder, "Come." So the Lamb breaks one of the seven seals, unties one of the knots, if you will, and all of creation gets excited. Just like we would, it's happening, he's about to open it. Wait, hold on, Dad, I got to go to the bathroom. No, just wait, hold it, he's going to open it. And like the first knot being removed and us getting that much closer, everybody's excited, it's happening. And so try to imagine the scene. Dad goes to untie one of the knots, right? And you're just in a hurry. If you're anything like my kids, like, just rip it open. Just cut it. There is nothing more annoying to my kids than when I grab a gift and I try to untie it and undo it. So Hannah's over here literally rolling her eyes. It's just trauma from this. She will be talking to her therapist about this. I promise you. It is so annoying. And they're like, cut it carefully, fold it back. Like, just rip it open. And so imagine that. Dad's untying one of the knots. Everyone gets excited. And then imagine mom steps in and says, wait, hold on. Before Dad opens any more of these knots, I want y'all to think about how we've been acting as a family. Wait, what? Mom, not right now. He's opening the gift. Can we do this later? We'll be fine. No, it's important. It's important that before Dad opens the gift, that we take the time to do this so that we can properly understand and appreciate the gift. I don't need to understand it, Mom. I just want the gift. You need to understand it or you guys are not going to be able to appreciate the gift. See, and I say it this way because I think that this is where a lot of people get stuck in this book. We mostly just want God to finally give us the answer to all the problems in the world and tell us when he's coming to fix everything so that we can get on with the whole eternity in paradise thing, right? Like, okay, God, tell us when you're coming, how you're coming, tell us what to have, what stuff to pack. We're ready to rock and roll. Let's do this. I need that mansion on the hill made of gold lined with silver. And so we just yell at him, just open the present already. Just tell us, like, am I wrong? This is what we want. And so what happens is we convince ourselves that he is, by opening it, in the process, already telling us and showing us what's in it. But that's not what he's doing. These seals and the opening of the seals are not what is inside the scroll. I can't help but think of Jesus. And Jesus, oh man, his disciples, I love them, but I kind of feel for them sometimes. Because if you read any of the four Gospels, when we find ourselves, if you read any of the four Gospels, you will find yourself frustrated. Because often, instead of simply saying, here's exactly what you need to do in this situation, or here's exactly how I'm going to fix this, or hey, disciples, here's exactly what we're going to do, what does Jesus do? He never answers a straight question. You could ask him, Jesus, 2 + 2, let me tell you the story of a woman. What? Right? Everything is that. Jesus, do you know where the bathroom is? The kingdom of God is like, he seems to go to great lengths to force those who would follow him to really think about their situation and how they got there rather than simply giving them the answer to the problem. It's like most horrible parents. Well, before we get you that, let's talk about how you managed to get in that mess in the first place. I was there. I do not need you to tell me. But the truth is we do, right? Because how many of us have done stupid things in our lives? Yeah, if you're not raising your hand, you're a liar and you're in church. I'm just saying, right? And we usually require someone else to point that out to us. And then we go, oh, you know, I knew it wasn't right, but when you say it out loud in that way, ooh, yeah, okay, I can see how that went that way. And so Jesus forces this on us. He wants us to think about it. If you don't believe me, go back and read Mark 4, verses 10 through 20. He literally confesses, well, this is why I'm doing it. And since Jesus is consistent in his let's talk about what's going on and how you got here thing in all four of the Gospels, I think it makes sense that he does that here in the book of Revelation as well, doesn't it? And so before the Lamb reveals the contents of the scroll, before he'll completely open this gift, if you will, and let me tell you, what is inside this scroll is truly a gift. The listener, that's us, we are required to take a look and consider why we're in this mess in the first place. And N.T. Wright says, things have to be exposed before they can be dealt with. And let me say this again, because this really is super important to grasp. The scroll sealed with seven seals cannot be read until all the seals are open. John is not receiving the scroll's contents seal by seal. Instead, he's watching a sequence of revelations that are associated with the breaking of each seal. The way a film might cut back to a flashback, an instant before something happens. Or the way mom stops dad in order to share the things that need to be known before the present can be accepted or appreciated. And so God begins exposing. He begins revealing what is happening to us while this scroll is being opened. And what he exposes, again, is not what's in the scroll, it's what is happening. It is what we have done. It is what we are doing, and it is these things that he is going to correct. And so let's move on to what we're told. I looked, and there was a white horse. Its rider had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he came out conquering and to conquer. Okay, here we go. Now, at first glance, one might see this and go, oh, well, this is Jesus. It's easy to assume that this is Jesus. After all, it's a white horse. He has a crown. He conquers. Who else could it possibly be? And we just heard the Lamb is worthy because he conquered. And Jesus is always dressed in white. But I want you to look more closely at this image. Because there are at least two details that I think shatter this identification. First off, the rider carries a bow. Now, without digging too deep into it, this is meant to point to the Parthians, who are famous archers riding white horses, who were the arch enemy of Rome, and maybe the only people that Rome truly feared. But more importantly, this is a weapon, and it is a weapon of distance killing. That's what the bow does. This is the image of trying to use stealth violence in order to get results. It's a weapon that allows the user to keep their distance while engaging in violence in order to keep blood off of their hands. It is not the weapon that we see Christ use anywhere else because it's not Christ. And it's not the weapon of Christ. It is not the sword from the mouth that is Christ's weapon throughout this book of Revelation. The weapon alone tells us that something is wrong. And second, the crown is given to him. A crown that is granted indicates a status that is external. It is contingent. It is conferred. But Christ's kingship is intrinsic. Jesus isn't given kingship. Jesus is king. Period. And so the rider of the white horse is attempting to use violence as leverage, but he's trying to dress it up like Jesus. The white rider of the white horse is performing Christ, not being Christ. And it's so important that we grasp that difference because at first glance, very quick, it can seem the same. We're like, well, it's the same person. It looks the same. But Carol Rotz, she writes just absolutely perfectly here. The resemblance of the first horseman to Christ shows that worldly power of death in the world is only an imitation or a parody of Christ's true power. The horseman kills others. The Lamb shows his power by dying for others. So Jesus meant when he said, no greater love has anyone that he would lay down his life for another. He's not saying die, anybody die. He's saying you live your life for the sake of others. You see, the rider on the white horse represents the Messiah that many wanted and many still want. This is the Jesus that we want. The writer is doing what people wanted Jesus to do. And it's precisely this that makes him a parody. You see, the The revelation is meant to tell us, you guys keep taking the things of God, saying, that's cool, God, but this is what we want. And then you force it upon God, put his image on it, and send it out into the world saying, this is Christ. This is God. He's called us to do this. But that is a parody of the true God. He wants to conquer. He's taking a swing at conquering. He's bent on conquest. But being bent on conquest is not the same as achieving it. Only the Lamb achieves conquest. The Lamb opens the seal through sacrifice, not through force. So violence and forceful conquest is humanity's default mode, not God's. You got that? Violence and forceful conquest is humanity's default mode, not God's. Throughout the history of humanity, kings have tried to justify their conquests as the moral high ground. Well, we're doing this because God needs us to do it. They're enemies of God. They're Satan. They must be destroyed. And maybe they even begin with the best of intentions. But eventually, what happens when we do this, and history has proven this, the white horse isn't enough. It's not enough to do things even from far away or stealth-like. And so that white horse typically ends up followed. When he broke the second seal, I heard a second living creature call out, come. And out came another horse, bright red. Its rider was permitted to take peace from the earth so that the people would slaughter one another, and he was given a great sword. When John received and wrote down this revelation, Rome was the superpower of the world. And they prided themselves on saying, we are Rome, and we have provided what we call the Pax Romana, the Roman peace. You have a peace unknown to humanity up until this point. Rome provided a nation that seemed stable, a nation that allowed for safe travel, a nation that allowed for safe trade, a shared language, a relative internal calm. But in reality, it was a peace that was enforced by armies, taxes, and crosses. And the red horse names what everyone could see but wasn't supposed to say. That Roman peace is a facade held together by military presence. It's held together by the sword. And even this word here, the large sword given to the red rider, it echoes the emblem of Roman emperors and their jus gladii. In other words, their right of the sword. I have the right of this sword. And the rider is given permission to take peace from the earth. This time, there's no subterfuge or deception, the way the white horse operated. In the background, below the radar of the average person. This is open. This is blatant. And the pretense is gone. Escalated quickly. Because now it's just war. I love what Eugene Peterson says about war, and he is so absolutely right. He says, war is a red horse, bloody and cruel, making life miserable and horrid. The perennial ruse is to glorify war so that we accept it as a proper means of achieving goals. But it is evil. It is opposed by Christ. Christ does not sit on the red horse ever. And the point that's being made here is not just to say that war is violent, but to call out how humanity often frames war as romantic or patriotic or just or as God-ordained. This is a truth that we would do well to consider and even recognize. But it's a tough one. We do well to even recognize that the church has often been complicit in the framing of this across centuries. The church has often found itself handing out swords, even though Jesus openly speaks against it. And we're so prone to this, so lustfully driven to war and violence. That we see it in how quickly we are to misinterpret and misapply passages like Luke 22:36 so that we can justify taking up a sword. Friends, the red horse is never called divine judgment or a holy warfare in the text. It is simply described as the consequence of what came before it. And what came before the red horse was humanity trying to dress up violence as Jesus. What follows the red horse takes us further down this hole of human depravity. He says, when I broke the third seal, I heard a third living creature call out, come. I looked and there was a black horse. Its rider held a pair of scales in his hands. And I heard what seemed to be a voice in the midst of four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a day's pay and three quarts of barley for a day's pay, but do not damage the olive oil and the wine. So the black horse here is intentionally depicted as sinister. The rider holds scales, the instrument of commerce, measurement, market transaction. And then we are told of this voice that announces prices that seems to be coming from the four living creatures, as if it's coming from God's throne room itself. It's as if heaven is acknowledging what the earth is doing. A quart of wheat for a day's pay and three quarts of barley for a day's pay. Well, wheat and barley were the most basic and common staples for the average person in first century Rome. It'd be like getting a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk. The red horse and his war led the world to a place where the daily ration of the most basic necessities would cost an entire day's wage. That's crazy. Can you imagine an economy so bad that your entire day's wage can only barely afford one day's worth of food? And we would joke today, well, the way prices are going up, yeah, we're getting there, right? We're moving in that direction for sure. Food's getting super expensive. But to live in a way that everything I do for an entire day barely provides me enough food for one day. That leaves nothing for family, rent, water, utility, clothes, medicine, anything. Like, yeah, okay, Pastor, I get it. We're not there yet. We know when God's ready to do this, all this stuff will happen. You work all day just to eat that day. Have you ever asked yourself how many people in our world already live this? And I know that many of us immediately, we start thinking about the homeless people in our country. But I want you to consider this, that right now, roughly one-third of the earth's population live this exact scenario. And the voice ironically points out the good news, though. Here's some good news. Yeah, you cannot afford barley or wheat. So poor people, y'all going to barely get by. But good news. Don't damage the olive oil and the wine. You see, olive oil and wine are commodities for the rich, not the poor. It's like saying the price of bread and milk have gone up so high that they're about $600 a day to buy a gallon. So there you go. Good luck with that. But the good news, the caviar and the Mercedes, those things are remaining the same price. The oil and the wine were commodities for the rich, not the poor. These things are protected. The rich are protected. And what God is telling us here is that the wars the kings wreak are paid for by the poor to benefit the king and the king's nobles. N.T. Wright puts it plainly, ordinary commodities, the staple diet of poor people, shoot up in price. Luxury items, oil and wine, stay the same, allowing the rich once more to get richer at the expense of the poor. This is not a random or accidental feature of the vision, it's just reality. This is a predictable economic consequence of war. When we go to war, supply chains collapse, agricultural land is destroyed or conscripted for military use, transport becomes impossible or expensive, and the resulting scarcity is distributed unequally. So whatever is left, we do not give first to the poor. We have always, every single nation to this point, at every single war to this point, always first distributes to the rich and wealthy, then to the poor. That is not a religious or political statement. That is a documented historical fact that God happens to be calling out. The poor starve while the wealthy use their capital to lock in supply. It happened in every Roman military campaign. It happens in every war. The scales in the rider's hand signal not merely famine, but famine with exploitation. And the natural result of the black horse is what's revealed next. If this is what you're going to do, then here's what's going to happen. When he broke the fourth seal, I heard the voice of a fourth living creature call out, "Come!" I looked, and there was a pale green horse. Its rider's name was Death, and Hades followed with him. They were given authority over a fourth of the earth to kill with sword, famine, and pestilence, and by wild animals of the earth. Notice that death and Hades are consistently personified together throughout the book of Revelation, and this personification is deliberate. John isn't making a metaphysical claim. He's not saying that death and Hades are literal beings. What he's doing is exactly what you do in apocalyptic literature. He's making the abstract visible and just giving it a dramatic presence. These are forces, not persons. And I think we would all do well to think about this. Nobody who is reading or hearing these words expected that a literal horse with death and Hades riding on it were going to appear. Nobody expected to one day look out their window and find four colored horses riding around going, "Oh, he's opening the seals." These are meant to describe something that is happening so that we can better see what we've been doing. But these forces of death and Hades are given authority over a quarter of the earth. And that sounds like, oh my goodness, here they go. God's giving them permission to hurt things. But in other words, what he's saying is that their scope is bounded. This is God showing grace. Because these forces would normally wreak havoc, even more havoc than we see. But God has hindered them. He's saying, I'm not allowing you to do what you have really the right to do based on the mess that they made. Instead, I'm going to force you back so that you can only do this much, just enough to get their attention. Because they need to see what's happening. And so what do they mean? Well, the rider of the white horse attempts to create peace and order through deception by dressing those acts like those of Jesus. The rider of the red horse takes up the sword of kings and openly engages in war and violence. And then the rider of the black horse brings famine through the exploitation of the poor. And then all of this naturally results in death. And it's not even necessarily an ordered thing as they overlap and go back and forth and they're so mixed up in our world. But all of this, friends, is predictable blowback. This is not divine punishment from outside. This is the predictable consequence of a social collapse that the first three horsemen have produced. Humanity created, empowered these riders to set a course for death and Hades to reap creation. We did this. We are doing this. God does not send any of these horses. We did. And we continue to do that now. Let me finish this with just two points. First, the four horsemen are not demons dispatched from some distant apocalyptic future. They are humanity's own recurring patterns. Military conquest dressed in righteous clothing. We've never done that. The open warfare that follows. The economic exploitation of the poor that war always produces. And then the mass death that results. This is the point of what God's trying to make us see before he'll reveal and execute his good and perfect plan. The white horse of military supremacy always produces the red horse of war. And war always produces famine. And famine always produces death. This isn't a future prediction. It's the permanent signature of human governance. We send out the white horse, we force disguised as peace, we watch it cause wars, which lead to plagues and famine, which leads to death, and then when we're done with that, we send out the white horse again. Rinse, wash, repeat. This is what humanity has done from the beginning, and it is what we continue to do even now. This is not a future prediction. This is a revelation of who we are. And what we are doing. But it is so much easier to say, no, it can't be. We're not that way. We're different. This has to be something in the future. It's not. This is now. This is a revelation of reality. It is humanity's reality. And the thing is, if it wasn't real, we probably wouldn't need Jesus to do what Jesus has done, what Jesus is doing, and what Jesus is going to do. But it is real, and we do. The second thing that I want to point out is that the book of Revelation should open our eyes to reality so that we can better be the people of God in this fallen world. Look, the four horsemen exist today. They have always existed. But I feel like God wants us to be able to take this realistic look at the world and then stop and compare it to this image from the throne room and then choose to be a people whose very way of life calls out the atrocities and inconsistencies of this world. For this, you were brought together. Now, it doesn't mean that when you do it, everyone's going to be like, oh my goodness, that's brilliant. They're probably going to think you're crazy, that you're out of your mind and you're going to be attacked. And what's sad is you're going to find yourself attacked, not just from those who openly profess to be against God, but the vast majority of your attacks are probably going to be from those who claim to worship God but have embraced the white horse and every horse that follows as their way of life. Make no mistake, you will be attacked. It will cost us. It will cost us to the point that maybe we will better understand what Jesus was pointing out when he said, the one who has no sword must sell his cloak and buy one. So my prayer is that even while all of this is taking place, even when you see it clearly and you're pressed to take part in the world's plan for peace, that you will choose instead to look to the Lamb. To look into the throne room and to know that we were created to participate in that kingdom, not in the kingdom of the beast. Amen?